Chelsea versus Sheffield United over 3.5 goals. Correct. Harry Kane to score any time in the North London derby. Correct. And we also did mention that it will probably be a penalty. Southampton versus Man United, second half penalty, wrong. And West Ham 2, Norwich 2, scoreline special, incorrect. West Ham kept a clean sheet to ruin BetBall's Squawker Acca this week. And also Southampton, Man United. We didn't see the penalty drama that Sam foretold last week.
We nearly did, though. There was an incident, I'm pretty sure, that was referred to VAR. And you said 2-1.
We all said Man United.
2-1, Man United score a penalty.
But it wasn't.
Would have been nice.
But it wasn't.
It was 1-1.
But this week, on the BetBall-sponsored Squawker Talk of Football podcast, with no Nations League football to talk about, we're going to go and skip 2 weeks ahead and do our Champions League predictions podcast. We'll be talking about who's going to win, dark horses, players you need to be watching out for. All will become clear as we move through the podcast. But you've heard Will has returned, so welcome back, Will.
Thank you.
Sam is here again. Sam, welcome.
How's it going?
And someone that hasn't chimed in yet, surprisingly, usually get some words in as early as possible. Mohamed Butt, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm saving all my my contrarian and hyperbolic nonsense for the actual podcast.
Yes, which is what we need you for, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. So,
expect it to be spicy, listeners, and we're going to dive straight into it, I think. We don't need any more preamble. And we'll be speaking straight away about who's actually going to win the Champions League. We'll be outright winners. And Sam, I'm going to throw it to you first. Straight away, who do you think is going to win the Champions League this season?
I think it's going to be Man City.
Oh, bold.
Bold prediction, I know, yeah. Mm. So Pep said recently that he doesn't think that winning the Champions League is going to change his life, and it's pretty easy to say that when you've already won it yourself. But I don't think we can beat around a bush that it will change things for Man City. It's the one that they've wanted, that the owners have wanted. It's the final piece of the project that will cement them as a force in Europe, and not just in England. And logic tells you that they are going to do it sooner rather than later. Obviously, the Champions League becomes a competition that's defied logic. But I've backed them to win it for the past couple of years, and I'm going to do it again until they finally win it.
Then you can say, I told you so.
So this is going to be their ninth successive appearance in the competition. Went out in the groups twice and then lost to Barcelona twice, back when they were sort of struggled when they still
in
got
the,
a really hard draw
in
every
the last
year.
16. Are you talking about lost to Barcelona?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so in both of those group stages as well, I think they drew Barcelona because they finished runners-up behind Bayern Munich in the same group, so...
That's what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Like, weird little history repeating itself.
They had like 3 or 4 years where it was really tough for them to get out of the group. And they've gone through that now because they should smash their group this year. So Atalanta, Dinamo Zagreb and Shakhtar, who obviously they battered twice last season, should be really straightforward for them. Obviously, the English sides have been their Achilles heel in recent seasons. But I really think if they can avoid the English teams, then they're going to go all the way. I was looking at their games around the group games as well. They've been dealt quite a decent hand with that. So they've got Norwich, Watford, Palace, Villa. Pretty sort of easy games around it. Gets a bit more difficult between their fourth and fifth group games, where they've got Liverpool and Chelsea. But
they're fine at beating English teams when it's in an English competition.
Yeah,
it's as soon as you say it's in the Champions League.
It's that anthem, isn't it? The anthem just puts the willies up and they can't handle it.
Booing it too much.
I mean, they haven't had the rubber to green in the competition.
No, they've been very unlucky. I mean, both as you say, like first when they would just draw these juggernauts, like when they weren't ready, and then when they formed a great team, they've had some pretty rotten luck with refereeing decisions either not going their way or then, you know, going their way, and then VAR's like, no. So, you know, and like VAR missing the Llorente handball when it, you know...
Well, that's the thing. If VAR's rules this season were enforced last season, then that goal would have been ruled out.
It's the big irony, isn't it? Because if VAR had existed when they played Liverpool, they would have got that penalty with Gabriel Jesus. Maybe they would have turned it around in second leg. Then VAR did exist and it seemingly denied them the Sterling goal. But if VAR had existed as it exists now, So it's like, what's gonna befall them this year that we change for next year? It's like,
well, they've already been robbed of some points in the Premier League because of VAR. But enough of that particular outlook. Man City, obviously, I was digging through some stats to back up some of my opinions later on. And Man City have been really good in the Champions League, which was annoying because we'll come to that when I talk about my bit about the point I wanted to make was made redundant by how good Man City have been. But you could argue that is because in their groups recently, they have been smashing it and playing weaker teams and clocking up those ridiculous goals. I think they've got the most goals per game in the Champions League in the last two seasons. And with BetBull, they are the favourites to win, Sam. So you haven't predicted anything rogue to start us off with. That's 10-3 on BetBull if you're looking to get involved. And at the end of this podcast, I should say, our accumulator this week won't be any predictions based on the international break. We're just going to try and guess every group winner and put that all together. So you can follow that at the end. The link will be in the description, as always. 18 plus, be gamble aware. So Man City, it's the year of Pep Guardiola. Famously not having reached the final yet since Man City. Is it not even reached the semi-final yet with Man City?
No, he hasn't, but Man City have.
That's what I'm saying. So Pep Guardiola, the man who made every semi-final, has taken over Man City, assembled the best squad in the league, and can't make a semi-final.
Round 16, quarter-final. Yeah.
So it's not going well for Pep Guardiola in the Champions League, Will. Do you back Sam's opinion that they are...
Well, yeah, I do. So full disclosure, I think they will win. They would be my prediction. Because they're just the logical prediction for two reasons that I'll come onto later. But obviously that would be boring if I then made the case as well. So what I thought might be quite interesting, without trying to be too clever, is if I could sort of like reverse engineer my opinion and think, why might they not win the Champions League? And I think the most simplistic reason is that the Champions League is so much more volatile than the Premier League, which is played over far more games. Football is a volatile sport anyway, because a single goal decides the outcome more so than in high-scoring sports like basketball or cricket, etc. And essentially, they are the favourites. They were the favourites anyway, I think. So the data scientists who created the algorithm for the BT script of the season gave them 20% chance of winning the Champions League, which was the highest percentage of any team in the competition. A statistical analysis website, 538, give them a 26% chance. I think that number comes out after they've drawn the easiest group of all the favourites to win it. Because as close as you can get to objectivity when measuring teams' ability, they are the best one because they win the most games, they score the most goals without conceding so many. But those two reasons, one can be picked apart and one might actually be, you might have it backwards. I think if you get a really easy group, you're less likely to win the competition because you don't have that tough test early on in the competition that kind of warms you up for the later stages. And in the groups, you can lose and then you don't go out the competition. So they kind of do serve as competitive games, yes, but also like warm-up games.
The PSG Ligue 1 syndrome.
Exactly, yeah. Well, yeah. League. Yeah, I mean, you could argue that those two things are connected. But the last six winners, three of whom I believe have been Real Madrid, have all had some kind of like elite team in their group. I'll go into more specifics later on for the next section because it is relevant to like something I found that was quite interesting because you can narrow it down further than just having a big team in your group. Mm. And then if you go back out of 10, there's seven of them have had like a tough, really tough opponent drawn with them in the group. So that reason, which is shortening the odds on Man City winning it with bookmakers, in my eyes, and it is an opinion that is like not watertight, it's just like it's just an observation in my eyes, actually decreases the chances of them winning it. The other reason that I mentioned earlier is this sense that they are objectively the best team in Europe because like the best teams win the most games, blah blah mm-hmm. blah. But in the champ, that the whole all the data that's sort of like going into that conclusion is mostly taken from everything else apart from the Champions League, in which they've only beaten, I think, three teams away in knockout stages, those being Schalke, Basel, and so I think Dynamo Kiev or someone like that. And this is a little bit further back. Pep Guardiola, as we've spoken about previously, also has a quite poor record away in knockout rounds. I think out of his 26 career knockout games away from home, he's won six.
Six wins, 10 draws, 10 losses.
Yeah.
There you go.
So there's lots of stats you can pull out of their performance in the Champions League that sort of count against them. But I mean, the sample size is much smaller. It's a much more volatile competition in which a single goal, a single VAR decision can just completely change the course
bring
of the competition.
Bring you to your knees, exactly, as it literally did City last season.
I mean, that's why I think Pep doesn't value it as highly as a lot of fans do, certainly, and a lot of other managers, because he understands it's a cup competition, so much can go right or wrong on the route to winning it. I mean, you just look at his Barcelona side. You know, they were brilliant in for four straight years, but in 2009-10 there was the volcanic eruption, they had to go to Milan by a coach. You know, they got rough rubber green, whereas they got lucky in 2008-09 with the refereeing decisions at Stamford Bridge. They got unlucky in Milan with some couple of refereeing decisions. Bojan's goal was disallowed for a ridiculous handball, and they go out. Whereas in 2008-09 they went through to the final and won. Mm. It could have easily gone the other way around, and then in 11-12
I wouldn't take him at face value on what he says about the Champions League, though. For the reasons you just gave.
But he's always said
that would make you hell bent on winning that competition.
He's always said it, though, even when Barca were winning the Champions League, and when he actually was a relevant winner, he always said that the league is the most important one because it shows the true quality of the side.
I would contest that. The Champions League, he's aware that winning it doesn't necessarily make you a great team because of those factors you've mentioned. Mm. But I agree with Will that he probably does really want to win.
Course he does. He wants to win everything. And City's players must be so desperate to win it as well, because they're all so good and they get such little recognition. And part of that is because
if they win the Premier League three seasons in a row, but then don't make a big dent on the Champions League during that time, then that should be seen as a failure, really.
They're still not as good as Ferguson's Man United, that's the other team that's won three Premier League titles in a row, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they also got that little Champions League to go with it.
So I agree with what you're saying, Will, in terms, essentially, the best team doesn't always win the Champions League, as we've seen loads, and it's the same in any competition.
The best team doesn't necessarily win any competition. It's just that the Champions League, the best team is even less likely to win.
But that doesn't mean that the best team shouldn't win it, though. If you are the best team, then you need to be...
Yeah, I don't
win
think
it. You should be winning.
I'll argue that the last five or six Champions League wins, Atletico only Barca 14-15 and Madrid 16-17, where you would argue the best team in the competition actually won it. You can maybe make a case for Liverpool last year as well, to be fair. But otherwise, you know, you look at Atletico Madrid were the best team in 2014, and again 2016 they bottled both finals. It's just there's so much luck involved.
Bottled both finals. Mohamed, who was playing up front for that team in those years?
We'll get to that later.
Well, no, we're getting on it now because we've discussed Man City.
He's gone rogue. Yeah.
We'll discuss it now because we've discussed Man City, the for and against why they might win it. Yeah. And to summarise that, Sam obviously feels, and I agree with Sam, Man City are probably the best team in Europe. Best team.
They are.
So they need to really try and win it this year. But it just seems, with that chaos of knockout fixtures, that a team that is set up to be so dominant across 38 games, as we saw, the 2-2 against Spurs, if that happens in a Champions League game where they battered Spurs and only got and Spurs get two away goals, then it's just a 1-1 draw at the home leg and you're out. And that's not a reflection on them being bad.
No, it's not.
That's the nature of knockout football. But Man City aside, you... No, you think Barcelona.
Yeah, I do.
And I'll tell you why.
Up until no, don't laugh. Actually, no, laugh a little bit. It's fine.
It'll make it even sweeter when they do. Yeah.
Up until the Anfield debacle last season, they were by a distance the best team in the competition. They had 151 shots. That's the most. 667 passes completed. That's the most. 142 chances created. That's the most. 122 dribbles completed, that's the most. 6 clean sheets, that's the most. 26 goals, 18 assists, both a second behind Man City. 183 tackles, third behind Ajax and Liverpool. They were the most dominant side. They were the best side. They were playing the best football. They looked the best. Bar one game where Chris Smalling knocked Lionel Messi senseless and then Barca struggled as a result. They really just looked like they were cruising. And then, obviously, they imploded at Anfield. Complete and utter devastation, right? And again, you could argue even the season before, they looked pretty good. And then they imploded in Rome. So you're thinking, okay, so there's a pattern here. They go 3-0 up and then they bottle it, right? But there's tactical reasons why those two defeats happened. And the main thing is Luis Suarez runs is not what he was. He runs himself into the ground, right? Come spring, can't run. And you saw him, hilariously, there's a clip, there's a gif going around of Fabinho just flooring him with a tackle. And of course, he's trying to outmuscle Andy Robertson. Robertson's just not having any of it. He tried to go around Van Dijk a couple of times. My dad was like, get out of the way. What are you doing, little boy? Suarez can't play clever, as it were, he has to play his own game, and his own game, he can't do it anymore against elite sides. Certainly not after like two thirds of a season. That's when the signing of, you mentioned him, Antoine Griezmann, alluded to him. Antoine Griezmann coming in changes everything for Barcelona. I'll get onto him more later. But basically, they've now got a striker who has, because he's 28, will not be completely dead on his feet come spring. He has actually in the past been dead on his feet for Atletico Madrid, because for Atletico Madrid, he's a one-man attack. There's no one else with him. He's playing up there himself. Now he's going to be playing with Lionel Messi. He's going to be, playing with, well, if Ousmane Dembele's hamstrings hold up, Ousmane Dembele, maybe it'll be Suarez, maybe it'll be 16-year-old Ansu Fati, who knows? But they'll be playing in an attacking team that will dominate the ball, who have less running to do as a result. And having a striker like Griezmann will help hugely. And the other thing, of course, the other weakness, the other reason why they fought forward in these big away games is Busquets is also, again, having played every single game, exhausted come the end of the season. They just signed Frenkie de Jong, who was the best midfielder in the Champions League last year. So Frenkie de Jong immediately addresses those concerns. If Busquets is injured or tired, take him out, put Frenkie de Jong in there. Frenkie de Jong, arguably defensively, is more solid than Busquets anyway. Not as good with the ball yet, but you just look at it. They had two huge reasons why they didn't win the Champions League last year. Lack of sort of gumption and athleticism and attack, signed Griezmann. A lack of a real top quality midfielder that wasn't exhausted and dead on his feet come April, they signed Frenkie de Jong.
But one of the major reasons you always contest that they don't win it is their manager, and they've got the same one.
Yeah, they've got the same one. But the thing is, it's harder for him to make those same errors if the players that, you know, his whole thing with not playing pace and attack, right? It's like, oh, that's a problem. But it's not less of a problem if you're playing Griezmann. Like, if Luis Suarez was Luis Suarez of 2016, it wouldn't matter if he didn't play Dembele up front. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like Valverde's problem is he thinks that Suarez is 3 years younger than he actually is. He thinks that Busquets is 3 years younger than he actually is. And he can't seem to let go of that fact. But by having signed Griezmann, having signed Frenkie de Jong, it doesn't matter if he plays those guys still and doesn't play pace and attack. Well, it still matters, but it won't matter as much because their form won't deteriorate as much as Suarez and Busquets did. So that's going to be the huge difference.
But if Ernesto Valverde is, and to quote you, and I said I'd be ready to contest you on this.
Jake's like eyebrow was twitching when you came in. Because
I'm not purposely trying to be a knobhead. This is something that just as a peer, I can't see how your pieces after Barcelona's defeats, and even throughout last season, and even in pre-season, have been quite explosive and in against Valverde and what he's trying to do at Barcelona. And Barcelona fans in general, some high-profile fans as well, share that similar view that the football being played under Valverde is not really going to go anywhere. They've started La Liga pretty poorly. The home game was very impressive, and then an away defeat and away draw. Under such a manager that was called a coward last season by yourself in articles.
And the season before.
Exactly. So you've had two seasons of him making the same mistakes that you've picked out in the Champions League. You've called their, and this was even with alluding to Griezmann as well, their attack's apparently broken. Louis van Gaal has even come out and said that already he's worried about the use of Frenkie de Jong in Barcelona's midfield. Something which I've seen you sort of not necessarily go in on, but you've highlighted that maybe, as you've said there, maybe he should just be used as a Busquets replacement. So how does this all of a sudden make them favourites to win the Champions League?
Well,
because I don't think much has changed. Or are you saying this one signing of Griezmann is enough to reverse all of those negatives that he's been criticised for over these past two seasons?
Well, it partly is and partly isn't. First of all, regarding Frenkie de Jong, 100%, the way he was used at first, playing as a six, as he normally rolled, that's absolutely fine. And then what happened is against Osasuna, he played him as like the high on the left, like almost where you play Iniesta, and he looked completely uncomfortable there, which is really, really stupid. But one thing Valverde does do, with the exception of playing pace and attack, is he learns from when he makes a mistake, he's like, oh, okay, I can change this. So I would expect, and as we saw actually, when he did make the substitution, he brought on Arthur, played Arthur as the most advanced midfielder, and then had Frenkie playing more on the right next to Busquets, where he would be natural, I think. So I think that's what's going to, you'll see that develop over the season. And yeah, Griezmann, just having a forward that isn't athletically done, like that could outrun a toaster, you know, in March, is going to be just transformative.
Well, they need a striker that scores away from home in the Champions League.
Exactly. You look at Suarez's failure to score in the competition in general, especially to score away from home. He hasn't scored away from home since the September 2015 against Roma.
Last 18 UCL away games he's not scored in. Yeah. And he only got one last season, which came against Liverpool.
Yeah.
And it was his 36th shot.
And it was a nice goal, but it was, again, 36 shots. So having someone that can actually put the ball in the back of the net, as Griezmann has done, that's going to be transformative. Frenkie de Jong, once they slot him into his rightful position, once they get Busquets, Arthur and de Jong working as a midfield trio, that will work. Valverde's limitations were exacerbated by the fact that the players he did rely on were physically past their best, right? That's the point. So yeah, Valverde is still going to be a problem for Barcelona, and I don't think it will be necessarily easy for them to win it, but I do have faith in them for two reasons. One is the players they've signed will have a huge effect on the way that their squad can rest themselves, like Junior Firpo, Musa Wagner. They can now sub Semedo, they can sub Jordi Alba, they won't necessarily be exhausted come that time. Rakitic probably will see less time in midfield, which is useful. Again, that midfield of Busquets, Arthur and Frenkie de Jong, if they can get that ready for big games, that's huge. Mm. So
there's been enough of a personnel shift to cover over the cracks of Valverde's cowardice.
Yes, but also Lionel Messi is just unreal. And one of the big problems Messi's had in the Champions League in recent years is, I mean, everyone saw that graphic of all the players that have come in from Barcelona, basically all of them have left. The big problem Messi has is that if he's marked out against and can't be a scorer, which happens in later rounds of the Champions League, he always creates. He put three chances on a plate at Anfield for Coutinho, Suarez and Alba. They missed them all. If he's putting out on a plate for Griezmann, it's going to be a different story.
Who will probably bottle it, given his previous reputation in the Champions League.
That's
finals.
Only finals. This is a semi.
yeah, of course. But there you go. I think we've sunk our teeth into that. Shake hands at the end of that one, Mo, and get ready.
Jake was standing over Mo while he did that whole question.
But I think it's really interesting because, as we always say, you are not scared to have those opinions and talk about them.
There's no lock for the Champions League. I'm 70% confident.
As I said, I'm probably, if we weren't friends, I wouldn't be that mean, I guess. but I know that it's...
It's all good,
I just, because I have to tweet out all your articles, I know exactly what you've written in most of them, so I can pull them from remnants of my brain. But it's really good discussion. And at the end of it all, I agree that Antoine Griezmann, and we spoke about this during the World Cup, is a world-class forward. Yeah. So if you're adding a world-class forward, and as you said, the best midfielder in the Champions League last season, of course it makes them a better side. I was merely playing devil's advocate to the points you were making. So winners there, I think Man City. Sam reckons Man City. Oh, I haven't been clear that... Oh, no. I think Man City are the best team, but I'd need to retract.
Yeah, talking about people who are being inconsistent in their previously held opinions.
So because this is the reason why I don't think Man City. I've put Liverpool as my prediction. But what I was getting onto was the furthest English side here. And so I put Liverpool as my prediction. And then last night, in my efforts to back up my prediction of Liverpool winning the Champions League with cold, hard numbers, I found out that Man City had been really good. But I did find a reason why Liverpool will still win it. And this is going against, this is maybe being hypocritical, is because Anfield is officially a fortress. And I feel like, as we saw with that Barcelona game, coming back from 3-0 down to win, Van Dijk has lost one game at Anfield since joining the club that he's played in, which was his second game against West Brom, which is quite funny. Alisson has lost more games at Anfield as an opposition player than he has as a Liverpool player, one. and although he's not fit, I imagine he will be fit at some point in the season and will be playing in the Champions League. They're unbeaten in their last 21 European home games at Anfield. In the Premier League, we know...
I think that's the longest active streak as well.
No, Barcelona's got like 38 or something like that.
Yeah, but this is European, because obviously...
No, that is in Europe, in the Champions League.
Barcelona, I know, I'm just saying that Liverpool's as well, to clarify, goes into Europa League stuff.
Okay.
And that's their second longest streak in their history, obviously. I think they were 40 games during the golden era of Champions League titles. So, to combat what I said and correct myself, I was swept up in Man City being so good on paper that I nearly said they would win. But I just feel Liverpool, and I always say this at the beginning of a season when we talk about this, and it's too long to be a catchphrase, but I genuinely always feel that Liverpool are the best. They're so geared to knockout football. The chaos that we mentioned in the fact that they can sit back and be the most devastating counter-attacking team.
Especially two-legged knockout football.
Yeah.
When Anfield.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. That Anfield factor that I always used to dismiss and be like, surely a stadium and a home ground can't have that much impact. I'm sold, I think. And with the players that they've brought in and that atmosphere that is created and what we saw against Barcelona last season, I feel like no one's going to want to go there. And also in their group last season, despite being woeful away from home, even I think they lost five consecutive games away in the Champions League, or were winless in five games going back from the season they reached the final. Obviously, it was a neutral ground anyway. And then the start of the group stage, they even lost to Red Star.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the funny thing about Liverpool is this sort of backs up a lot of points about it. It's not necessarily how well you play in the group stage, what we've mentioned about Man City and about even Barcelona. Liverpool in the group stage really only really played well against Red Star at home, like against Napoli at home. They had the Alisson save to get through. They needed a bit of Bobby Firmino magic to beat PSG, like, and they were rubbish away from home. But then, you know, once you get the momentum, you get to knockout rounds, and then it all comes off. So the same sort of way as Real Madrid. Real Madrid were never good in any of the group stages. They got through. Cristiano scored a bunch of goals, and then
They kept coming second, as Will sort of alluded to, didn't they?
It's just
sure you get through and then turn it on in the group stage. But then with the numbers, so I put together a big spreadsheet of, like, since Liverpool beaten back-to-back finals. So it was very kind to their sort of prominence in the Champions League, but I was trying to set them up as why they are the most dominant force in European football. And as I said, like, purely numbers-wise, it actually sort of came unstuck. But I managed to butcher something that I want to highlight. Is probably just me choosing it. They're the only team above average in... So I worked out the average of every team that had gone in there and then sorted it out. And they're the only team above average in goals, tackles, fast breaks, chances created from open play, chances created in set play, and possession won in final third. So the reason I picked those was to try and create this image of a team that is so versatile in what is a chaotic nature of football, knockout football, that they can equally dominate you and have seven different ways of scoring a goal. I think they've scored the most headed goals in the Premier League since the start of last season, seven more than any other team, because of the Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson's incredible delivery. So they can kill you with crosses, which, as we know, Real Madrid are very good at, aren't they, Mo?
Hashtag sexy moys.
Yeah, but they've also got this front three that if they do sit back, they have one of the scariest transition forwards, or three of the scariest transition forwards in Europe at the moment as well. So I just feel like Liverpool, and what we say about Manchester City, I know they do score on the break and they have players that can do that, but Pep Guardiola's obviously been criticised in previous seasons for trying to, or maybe overthinking some of the Champions League games and still sticking to that style, whereas Liverpool have a clear identity, but their ability to sort of morph into different style teams, be a sort of deeper defensive team and counter-attack the teams that want to dominate the ball, but also completely impose themselves on the weaker teams and be relentless, as we saw against Bayern Munich, which I know didn't end up with a goal. So this point and all those metrics that I highlighted, I thought, tried to paint a picture of one of the most complete sides and most versatile, which lends itself to winning knockout football. Yeah, and then you combine that with a fortress of a home ground. And as we've said, Man City at the Etihad have had those high-scoring games, whereas Liverpool don't just win at Anfield, they shut you out of the tie completely. 4-0, I know it was the second leg, but they get the job done in that home tie, whereas everyone else, it's like, you might still concede to.
Yeah, Liverpool were also quite popular on the sort of the blind poll that we took among the Squawker staff, and then put in a spreadsheet as well. And I think there's a couple trends you could look at to make a case for them. And I need to stop doing this, but this is another sort of thing I vaguely remember being true. But I think that Klopp at Liverpool has never failed to make the final of every European competition he's been in. So you've got the Europa League one that they lost. Yeah, it's a shame he's lost two of those.
Yeah, exactly. And 50% final win rate is not bad.
And also final appearances often result in future final appearances and Champions League wins. Real Madrid skews that because they've been in the final and won it consecutively for three seasons, of course. But Liverpool, obviously, in the final, then reached the final again and won it. If you go back a little further than that, you've got Bayern. I think they got beat by Chelsea the year before they then won it against Dortmund.
They got beat at home in their own stadium.
And then when Chelsea won it themselves in 2012, it's not too far away from when they lost to Manchester United. In Moscow,
and they also made the Europa League final the year after they made the Champions League final.
And then going back a little bit further than that, you've obviously got Liverpool winning it in 2005, then reaching the final again. But the flip side of that is that AC Milan were lost the 2005 final, then won it 2 years later, yeah. 2007.
And you could even look in the 90s where there was a streak of a team would win it, then make the final next year and lose to the subsequent winner. So yeah. I think Ajax did that, then Juventus did that, and then I think...
All of which means Tottenham are going to win the Champions League.
There you go. So... To
for the record,
Will's predicted three different winners on the podcast.
I think
it's the only way.
I changed my own prediction midway through after saying that Liverpool were going to win out of gut, and then finding out.
It's because you realise that Liverpool are the Novak Djokovic of football. They can beat you in any different number of ways. Shout out Brian Phillips and his wonderful piece on Djokovic.
There you go. My main point that I tried to make about Liverpool there was the versatility. And then there's a couple of other stats that I picked out. And it's annoying how good Real Madrid are in terms of number-wise. Because I'm being converted to Mo's point of view a bit more after seeing the sort of chaos in Real Madrid this season. That Zidane, and I know as you always do mention, that 16-17 squad he had was just obscene. Yeah, he used it very well.
Yeah, really, but, really good.
What's annoying is they've actually come up really... So I crunched all these numbers per game as well to try and give some sort of fair respect. And it's still relatively a small sample size. Liverpool played the most games and that's only 26. It's not even a full season. And then obviously you have the difference in quality between group and knockout, etc. But PSG, Man City and Liverpool lead goals per games. Man City and Liverpool are 2.5. PSG are on 2.9. But that's because they the last two seasons, they've absolutely mauled the group stage, and it lends itself to your theory earlier, Will, about, and I even called it the PSG Ligue 1 syndrome. They've been having that in the Champions League as well.
Also Neymar's foot explodes.
Interesting you mentioned PSG, I'll come to later.
Oh, and more teases. And then another stat that I found interesting was passes into the box per game, which includes crosses. So Trent Alexander-Arnold always ranks highly on this and was the most for Liverpool last season. Bayern are the only team that beat them per game in that, and they also have a right back that loves crossing it into the box, Joshua Kimmich there. So Liverpool are just ranking really highly in all of the different stats. You don't have one particular style, and I think that ability to sort of transform and adapt is the reason why, yes, I do, I've convinced myself again, Liverpool, I put as the furthest English side, and I do think they'll win it again, because the last point I'll say on that is that Liverpool and Man City, I think now, have established themselves as the two best teams in Europe. Full stop, in my opinion, based on what I've seen from other leagues and the sort of chaos, as I said, with Barcelona. Yes, they've signed good players, but still have not looked convincing in some games.
They've got Lionel Messi yet to come back, which is a huge, huge factor.
Who is a factor in himself, but I just still don't feel Barcelona fill me with that much confidence. Whereas I watched Liverpool and I watched Man City and I just think, wow, they're so far beyond anyone else. And then the only reason to choose between those two in the Champions League is that sort of, as I said, Man City are this juggernaut geared towards grinding down every opponent over 38 games. Liverpool can play you anytime, anywhere and beat you. That is my roundup on that.
I really hope they get drawn against each other.
And it'll be in the round of 16 or so. Oh, it can't be that quarterfinal.
Final have been last season.
After last year's All English final, please don't give me that again.
See, I think Liverpool will make the final again, where I think they'll lose to Barcelona, because at the Anfield edge, I think that will tip. Because I think over two legs, I think it's hard to see anyone beating Liverpool, in all honesty. Because the Anfield factor is so real. And if it wasn't real, after last season, it's going to be real.
Yeah, people
That comeback is going to make it just such a factor. The only team with a comparable home advantage is Barcelona. So if they draw them again, who knows what the score is going to be. But
that was the battle of
the home records. And so, I mean, beyond those, I can't see anyone beating Liverpool over two legs. So it'd have to be in the final. And I do think Barcelona would have their final.
Or get knocked out in the groups. Oh, imagine
That would be a turn-up.
But we'll have a little pause here, because we've discussed sort of the main contenders for the Champions League and who we think is going to win, and also the teams to go furthest. After the break, we'll be sort of diving a bit deeper into other teams mentioned, and also looking at which teams we think are going to be the most disappointing. So after discussing the best teams in the Champions League, we're going to talk about the ones that are going to break our hearts, or not necessarily break our hearts, just disappoint us completely. We're talking about the biggest flop in the Champions League this season. And as Will teased to you in the first section, it would only make sense to start with him. And I think you've got the team in the French capital that you feel like will flop the most.
Anyone who put two and two together knows I'm about to say Paris Saint-Germain, who are... And I hope all of this is right, because it's actually quite a delicate theory where if I've made one mistake, I'll be religiously checking this afterwards. But PSG, according to my findings, are the kingmakers of the Champions League. By which I mean, only once in the last five seasons have PSG not played the eventual champions, being Liverpool, with whom they shared a group, of course, last season. Real Madrid, twice. They didn't play the eventual champion in 2017, but they were obviously knocked out by Real Madrid. The season Real Madrid won it by beating Liverpool in the final. And then Barcelona they shared a group with Real Madrid again in 2016, and then they shared a group also with Barcelona in 2015. So basically, if you want to win the Champions League, get drawn in the group with Paris Saint-Germain. I was going to say Real Madrid. Oh. That's why Real Madrid are going to win the Champions League this season, but equally Galatasaray.
So that's your fourth prediction, Will.
And so this was actually, so we were in the office yesterday and I gave out a little cry of ecstasy after finding something, and it was partly that and partly that, but the trend that I was hoping would continue beyond five previous campaigns was that it was PSG and Dortmund. The eventual champions have shared a group with, because in 2018 you had Real Madrid sharing a group with Spurs, Dortmund and Apoel, and then in 2017 they shared a group with Dortmund, Legia Warsaw and Sporting, and in all the other campaigns the eventual winners have shared a group with Paris Saint-Germain. And of course you can back them to be flops because they tend to do quite well in the group stage,
as I mentioned, with
phenomenally
the
well really,
and then they get kind of an unluckyish draw and then losing.
And then Neymar's foot explodes.
Later stages, exactly. And Neymar having suffered the same injury, pretty much the same injury, that metatarsal injury, two seasons in a row.
And then it happened again in the summer as well, didn't it?
Could make it a hat-trick this season. Yeah. If sort of the problems behind the scene don't disrupt his season even before then.
Well, they've signed Mauro Icardi, so that'll calm things
down. I think low-key could be like one of the signings of the summer, because if you take him away from all the issues that he had with Inter, he is a really talented player.
But he'll just have all the issues with Paris, though. Then PSG is a locker room with no leadership.
I think he'll get maybe a season or two before it all kicks off.
Let's see.
He needs to sign him for $70 million before that, though, because it's only a loan, isn't it?
Let's see. I mean, this is the thing. I actually agree with you. The flop PSG are a good shout to be flop, because there's no leadership in the locker room. Neymar doesn't want to be there. Patently doesn't want to be there. Suarez has come out like, he tried everything to come to Barcelona. So like, he's made it very obvious he doesn't want to be at PSG. They're still a team. They've made some good times, but they're still a team without leadership. There's no locker room presence. You're thinking he's the leader. Like, who is it?
Relying on 20-year-old Kylian Mbappe.
I mean, yeah, literally. And even he's being poisoned by the attitude. You see, he's being more petulant than ever, kicking off more than ever. Got sent off in the French Cup final. Mm. So it's
just a word. Just a word that sort of echoes how good PSG and Neymar in particular usually is in the Champions League group stage before his foot explodes. Since 2016-17 season, which is all we can go back for at the moment, the most goals and assists in the Champions League is Ronaldo on 43, Messi next on 36, and then Neymar on 28. Mm. So he's getting serious. He's got some serious stats, and he's got the most assists in that time, the most fouls won, and the most take-ons completed, which is the Neymar hat-trick anyway, pretty much. But just to communicate that, as it often is sort of said about Neymar, is that he won't do it in big games. But he's not even been able to play in many of
these. He's the king of big games. Yeah. What are they talking about? He won the Olympics for Brazil.
The game against PSG is like one of the greatest examples of that.
Exactly. So I'm just saying that if PSG flopping probably depends on if the Neymar pattern will repeat itself.
I mean, because that's the thing.
If we can see they will... Do we think they'll get through that group? Are they that bad of a flop, Will, that they won't qualify in that group?
Oh, so yeah, I was basically just calling them a flop as an excuse to explain that pattern that I found.
PSG now, even if they get to the knockouts, because of that awful record since their takeover, I don't think they haven't made a semi-final.
No. So they're fifth favourites to win. So really, if you're a fifth favourite and you're not getting to at least the quarters, then you flopped.
But even then, it's quarterfinals again for PSG, for this side that has so much talent. Is that disappointment?
Should they? Of course, that is a flop.
So PSG must reach the semi-final this season to avoid being the
a flop
laughingstock.
Yeah, because I just think the culture of it, the cult, sorry, of everyone willing them to lose, has now taken hold. When they're playing in the knockout stages, you're tuning in to see them lose, effectively. They've got that bottle job label, and as Spurs know, once you've got that, then that is a huge mental block to have to overcome. And of their... So, as we touched on, they went out four quarterfinals and now three consecutive round of 16s.
Oh, it's so poor.
And only two occasions out of those... In those last seven seasons, have they gone into the second leg losing? So they've been drawing twice and leading three times, but they haven't won any of them. Ugh, so that is pretty damning that they're not there for the second leg. Because really, when they if I was going to put a percentage on it, I'd probably say that they were 80% through after they beat Man United in the first leg last season. They looked so good, you couldn't see Man United coming back at all. And they absolutely bottled it.
The minute you said that, I just got the image of that Neymar gif on the touchline in my head.
Exactly.
It's maybe not quite as such that people are willing them to lose, but I think it's more that people really relish it when they lose.
When they do lose.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, we said it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, when Chelsea had their takeover and when Man City had their takeover, you have to go through that sort of maybe 10, 15 years of everyone hating you until you win stuff regularly and get past that. And yeah, they're dominating League One, but until they win that Champions League, that's always going to be a stick that people are going to be able to beat them with.
Mm.
And the thing with PSG is because they're so much better than everyone else in Liga, dominating Liga doesn't even bring the sort of kudos that it should do. Like the way they dominate Liga is impressive. They're really good in domestic football, but no one cares because it's like... They're so much richer than everyone else. They're so much better. I mean, they've got Neymar and Mbappe, for God's sake. Like,
and Cavani.
I mean, that's the thing. Cavani was their all-time top scorer before Neymar and Mbappe even arrived. Like, and they had Zlatan before. They've got so much overwhelming quality in their team. I do wonder if them being a flop maybe does actually hinge on Neymar being injured or not. Because I do genuinely believe if Neymar hadn't been injured, they would have beat Man United out. They would have beat United's brains out. Mm. All over that pitch, and they would have beaten Real Madrid as well the previous season. I do think,
and also let's remember that Man United win against PSG was one hinged on a penalty call at the end, and also they had like two shots on target.
Yeah.
So it was just that sort of that was a Champions League win if you've ever seen one.
Yeah,
that's the one that always undoes
Smash
Man.
And grab.
Yeah, no, it's the one that always does Man City, and that's again Liverpool are capable of doing that. Just to re-emphasize that point.
With PSG, it feels inevitable that it's going to happen though.
Yeah, they need to have a season like because Neymar, two seasons in a row he's been in Paris, two seasons in a row he's got this metatarsal injury. You know, you just think, oh, it's going to happen again, isn't it? You can't sort of shake it. It's gonna keep thinking like that, feeling like that until it doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If that makes any sense.
Or if they have a new core of the team, because you think like Thiago Silva and Verratti. Like,
I mean,
those guys have been there.
Thiago Silva needs to be replaced. They need a leader. But I would say actually one thing that. Just to bring, because you mentioned their streak of like round of 16 quarterfinal defeats. That reminds me most of Real Madrid's round of 16 streak, where they were like for I think 6 years, 7 years, they were knocked out the round of 16, and then they got Jose Mourinho in, and suddenly he took them to the semi-finals, and then their whole new era began. And you know, Jose Mourinho doesn't have a job.
He doesn't have a job.
Thomas Tuchel,
and they've already lost in Ligue 1.
Yeah,
this
so
season.
You know, if you can see it happening, can't you? Because that's the one league he hasn't coached in it yet.
Just as Mourinho is converting the masses with his incredible punditry and really nice demeanour,
he's going to go marry
Neymar. He's
going
to go to PSG and win the Champions League with the most hated team in Europe, and then he will return.
I mean, because you can imagine that team being coached by someone. Because the thing is, Mourinho's big problem at United was they couldn't play the way he likes to play football because the defenders weren't good enough, right?
Well,
at PSG, Marquinhos is great.
Week by week, you know. His quote about second place with that Man United side being his best achievement looks even more correct. Given Man United's relative struggles and the fact that they've just got rid of half their squad and not replaced it. One of which went to PSG, and Herrera obviously was meant to be the change in the tact of PSG. PSG signings, when you look at them, signing over 40 million.
Idrissa Gueye, very good signing.
And they just bought some bodies. really, to add to it, because that's what they didn't have last season. Tuchel, how many times did he complain last season that he didn't have any midfielders? He's bought Herrera, Gay, two workhorses, really, that aren't...
Sarabia should be interesting. Yeah. There's a lot of players there that you sort of think they've just bought squad depth, basically.
Yeah.
But also, it almost feels like they bought players in preparation for Neymar leaving, because it's like, you could you can see getting Icardi and getting in at Pablo Sarabia. You can see maybe they're thinking, okay, if we get rid of Neymar, we can put Mbappe on the left and then Di Maria on the right.
I think Icardi's the sort of laying the groundwork for replacing Cavani.
I mean, yeah, that's obviously what that is.
Into his last year or long, maybe
Years. He's leaving at the end of this year. He said he's not signing a new contract, so he's going to leave at the end of this year. He's been enough of a servant to PSG to let him do that.
See, Cavani's the sort of player that you'd like to see win the Champions League, I think. Mm. And I think everyone that
he's a lovely
any frequent listeners of Scorker Talk will know that we
I was looking into
spot,
records over the last three seasons, and I think he's in the top five for goals scored. He, just behind actually maybe fourth behind Messi, Ronaldo, of course, Lewandowski.
Cavani is just Suarez without any of that horrible personal baggage.
And Cavani as well scored in like eight games in a row, which is I think only him and Ronaldo have done. So he did that in the Champions League. If PSG can keep Neymar fit, then they could get to that elusive semi-final. But as you said, it seems inevitable that they will build everyone's, not hopes, because as you said, no one really wants them to do well. But everyone will start thinking, oh, this is it. PSG last year were favourites at one point, I think, because of how good Neymar and Mbappe were.
The season
were
before as well, I think, when they were drawn.
To quote Aretha Franklin, great gowns, beautiful gowns. PSG's kits are amazing. That's all I have to say with PSG.
And that's why they're not your flops, though.
No, I think...
Because you think also the flop of the tournament is coming from that Group A.
Yeah.
And Real Madrid are favourites to win that group on paper. and that was the most natural laugh I've ever had, actually. Mo sounds like he genuinely finds that funny. So do you want to quickly explain
why
you think...
Real Madrid are terrible, man. They were awful last season, and they sort of... by hook or by crook, got their way to the quarterfinals and got summarily embarrassed by Ajax. They're not a good team. They haven't kept a clean sheet. That's right. In their last 25 games, they've kept 5 clean sheets. And 3 of those were the guy they just shipped to PSG, who, by the way, is going to make a difference for them, Keylor Navas. Mm. Never not won the Champions League as a starter. So,
and one of only 2 goalkeepers in the Champions League era to start 3 finals and win.
So... you know, they've got rid of him. They've got Courtois, who has last kept a clean sheet in the 3rd of February. 2019.
Cool. It's the worst
of
his career or something like
him
that.
Him and De Gea have sort of were competing for the best 2 in the world, and they've plummeted down the rankings.
Courtois had previously always played behind a solid defence, and he's not anymore, and it shows. And I don't know what the hell's wrong with De Gea.
He's getting nutmegged because he's too tall.
Probably the top knot. I still think with De Gea that's cursed him. But honestly, Real Madrid just are not good. They've signed some good players this summer. Although it took until Villarreal for Zidane to actually use them, like Ferland Mendy played very well.
He didn't want any of them, it seems.
Well, I mean, he wanted Pogba and he wanted Hazard, and that's about it. Hazard's injured and Pogba didn't come. And I think, you know, he's got Luka Jovic, who I think he's just playing because he has to play him at this point. Militao is actually very good, but for some reason he's still playing Sergio Ramos, who looks done. He's always been a ropey defender and an amazing player presence and a leader. So you play him because he's a great leader and because he can score you goals and because he's a decent one-on-one, but he's always had defensive problems. Now
the
he just
Granit Xhaka of centre-back.
I mean, yeah, basically. He looks even...
that
he
is
looks
harsh. Do you reckon Ramos got the house key even though he was younger than his older brother as a kid?
Ramos just looks like...
that's a deep cut.
He was so poor against Villarreal at the weekend. He just looks done. Marcelo is... probably past it, but Marcelo is such a great attacking player that you can understand why he's been retained. But
I just want Marcelo to go to Brazil as well and just have him and Dani Alves as the two leading number 10s in the division.
That would
now.
Be that. The thing is, they had the
just
talent
enjoy,
to do that.
Well, that's what I mean. Just go and enjoy football.
Look, their midfield.
Don't tarnish your reputation any further.
I mean, yeah, the Madrid midfield is a joke. It's the same midfield that was starting for when they won 2015-16. Casemiro, Modric, and Cruz. Kroos has always had limitations defensively. They've only gotten bigger as he's gotten older. Modric is... I mean, he's 34.
I think that World Cup killed him.
And look, I understand that because he was amazing. And what it took from him to get Croatia to that final. Because everyone else was playing... Rakitic was playing very, very, very well, but they were playing their game. Modric went superhuman in those extra time periods to drag his team forward. He wasn't just holding the ball, he was dragging it. It was like Iniesta and Xavi combined sort of thing. So he's left it all in Russia. He's not looking there. Plus, he is 34.
Yeah, but this is what I mean. It's, a lot it wasn't a dig. It was like, as a last hurrah, mate, well played.
He was playing, you know, we're talking about winning the Premier League three times in a row. He was playing for Tottenham in midfield when Man United won three times in a row, like in 2008-9. He's been around for a while. Casemiro is just terrible. You know, never been more than average. But at least when Modric and Kroos were so dominant, all he had to do was tackle people, and he did that excellently. He can still do that well, but like now that the other two midfielders aren't dominant, it's not the same. Up front, there's no Chris. Look, they've got Eden Hazard, right? And with Eden Hazard, you can't write them off, right? Because if he plays the way he know he can play, anything's possible.
Then he could potentially drag them to.
He's not going to score goals, so that Benzema and Jovic are going to have to score the goals, but he can create the chances.
Hazard won't score the goals.
He can lay in one. Well, he's not.
He's
like,
famously got like one in the Champions League.
Yeah, he's not a Champions League, but he can create the chances. He can dice anyone up on the dribble. To the level of Neymar, he can just bamboozle anybody. But they across, if Benzema and Jovic can be on their toes, and this is why I was hesitant initially to do this, because I do think Hazard and Jovic potentially is a very lethal combination. But Madrid's midfield and their defence is just awful. Courtois looks a shadow of his former self. PSG are not messing around. I think they've managed to retain Neymar. Idrissa Gueye is going to eat that Real Madrid midfield alive.
Falcao, man,
El Tigre for the Lions is gonna, you know, that's gonna be. I think Galatasaray are gonna surprise some people.
So although, Real Madrid, will they make? Do you think they're gonna make it out the group? Is it that bad?
No, they might just because Galatasaray's defense. Before anyone, I mean, I do love Galatasaray, but their defenders are not good. Like, you know,
and as well, when you sign like 15 players,
we're like this. Galatasaray. We're alluding to it, but come from the fact that all the players they've signed and they've just got so many cool players
just swept up.
No, they'll be fun to watch, but they Luyendala and Marcão are not great defenders. They complement each other quite well, but like they're still not great. So,
but a squad like that owes itself to making Group A one of the most exciting groups.
I would say so. Yeah, but I think Real Madrid will get to knockout rounds, and the first half decent team they face, apart from PSG, will just duff them up. They're not good.
Not good. Will. When I was saying Group A might be the most exciting?
Yeah, I do think so, but I'm kind of being a bit basic there, just because it's got the two potential flops, but also two teams who figure quite high in the favourites list. Two teams you wouldn't be surprised to see actually win the competition, notwithstanding PSG's, the reasons we've given for PSG, but based on quality.
Yeah, the favourites go Man City, Barcelona, Liverpool, Real Madrid, PSG, and then Juventus, Bayern, Atletico. And then PSG still rank high because I think they've got the best young forward in the world, one of the best other forwards in the world.
And for the reasons Mo spoke about just then and in his article that we published yesterday, Galatasaray are quite a cool team at the moment, based purely on looking at the lineup they can assemble, based on what signings.
Any team with Falcao in it is worth watching.
That'll make it exciting. And obviously, last time Falcao... Oh, no, he's still at Monaco. I was going to say, last time he's in the Champions League, they binned off Guardiola's Man City. But obviously, that was the famous Monaco team.
They did do that, though.
But he was in there last year when they were under Thierry Henry and didn't do very well. But
I think Group F would be good with Barcelona, Inter and Dortmund.
Yeah, I think that's
a bit obvious. A bit of an obvious answer.
Not obvious, but it's like, that's clearly the most talented group in terms of quality of teams.
What I think Group A has over that one is that PSG and Real Madrid are closer to each other than Barcelona and Inter and Dortmund are. But Barcelona are just like a level above their two opponents.
Well, I'd say Group H would be an interesting one because out of all the sort of top tier seeds, Chelsea may be the weakest, and then Ajax, Valencia, Lille, I think they're probably all around the same sort of level.
Well, that is the group I picked as the most exciting purely because of them all being, it's pretty much all four teams on a level playing field. And a lot has been said about Chelsea's young team and the exuberance of youth, but the exuberance of youth meets the even more exuberant youth in that group.
That's a lot of exuberance.
Lille, I know. So group H is the H is for exuberant now, silent. Lille, their last 11.
How many letters are silent in the start of that word?
H is for exuberant.
Yeah, there you go. But to be serious, Lille's last 11, the average age was 23.7 years old. Chelsea's was 24.5 years old, which was their youngest in Premier League history. Ajax's was a surprising 25.2 years old, obviously losing De Ligt and Frenkie de Jong, 19 and 21 respectively last year, has brought it up somehow. And they're also playing Veltman at right back. But if Mazraoui comes in, then that drops down. So they can have an average age of 24 probably in some games. And then Valencia, average age of 26.6, is still not too old. And they also have Maxi Gomez on the bench and the potential to add young players into the squad. So I feel like Valencia are probably the least exciting based on the general perception of their style of play. And
but they could be quite good though with Carlos Soler, Ferran Torres.
Exactly. So they've got young players, and the addition of Maxi Gomez was really fun.
Oh yeah,
as well.
Big signing.
And remember, they've won the Copa del Rey. They beat Barcelona, so they've got a bit of clout. They're the only team, well, not the only team. They've got
the Copa del Rey. Just remember that Chelsea won the Europa League.
Yeah, and obviously Ajax won the Dakar. They're the only team with one trophy though. But they beat Barcelona to get that title, and as Mo said, he's predicting to win the Champions League. So Valencia can have confidence, and it will be well placed in them doing well in knockout competition. And Dani Parejo, again, expect him to have another season where people remember or start to realise how talented he is as a midfielder.
He was excellent, but the funny thing is against Juventus in the group stage last season, what brought them down was because he was so bad in that game. He gave away a penalty, scored an own goal. Yeah. It was like, oh my God.
But it all led up to him lifting the trophy.
Yes, good for
against Barcelona. But Lille in particular are really interesting because obviously last season they came second in Ligue 1 because of the likes of Nicolas Pepe, Rafael Leao up front, who have both been sold on for a combined 100 million. Rafael Leao has gone to AC Milan, which is still really interesting to see how that works out because AC Milan themselves seem a bit chaotic this season. Nicolas Pepe, obviously, we've seen him play at Arsenal. But they've replaced Leao at least. They've replaced Nicolas Pepe from within almost. They've got Jonathan Ikone playing there as well as other youngsters. But their striker that they've bought is a reason why I think this group is going to be one of the most exciting, because I'll sort of segue onto one of the sections now to talk about him rather than diving back into it. The striker they've bought, Victor Osimhen, is 20 years old. They bought him for around 20 million, I think. He holds the record for most goals scored at a single under-17 World Cup tournament in 2015 for Nigeria. He scored 10 times, which is pretty incredible.
That's ridiculous.
And he's already scored 4 goals in Ligue 1, all of which came from his first 4 shots on target. So it's not necessarily like, oh, he's banging in goals and getting loads of shots. But he is a striker that I'm expecting to thrive in a group in which I can imagine everyone just wants to play a bit of football in there. Valencia, yes, perhaps the only team that will be a bit more...
and even then,
refined in their style.
No one can really defend in that group, I don't think. Not to any elite level. So, although I mean, Valencia will have Silasen in goal, and he's quite good. But I mean, honestly, Chelsea got Kepa. So, honestly, and actually, I actually got Onana. Bloody hell, good goalkeepers in that group.
Good goalkeeper. This is what I mean. So, you try to make statements about this group, and then realise you've been completely wrong in your head, as we've already done. The amount of trophies that are in it is impressive, and also the quality of goalkeepers in it. Lille's goalkeeper won goalkeeper of the season last season. So the group of the goalkeepers as well, this has got all the narrative in this group. But the reason why I picked it out as well as most exciting is because the talent of those teams, the young teams, and Osimhen up front, I imagine, is going to score a few goals in this group. Obviously Ziyech, Tadic still at Ajax, somehow also Van der Beek still there. There's going to be plenty of goals, and I think it will lead to the reason why I think Chelsea are going to be the flops of the tournament. Mainly because I just think they're going to be outscored in a similar pattern to what we've seen in the Premier League so far. They've dropped the joint most points from winning positions already. I know, very small sample size. Already dropped 4 points alongside Man United. But I can't call Man United the flops of the Champions League because they're not in it. So Chelsea fall into that bracket for me. And it's more based out of their opposition, not an actual sort of negative attitude towards Chelsea, because I'm loving watching them, and I think we've discussed that already. I'm really excited to see Abraham Mount in the Champions League. That's going to be really interesting. And they also have Olivier Giroud, who was alongside Messi directly involved in the most goals in European competition.
I think Mason Mount could take this group by storm. I don't know whether Chelsea will have enough defensively to get out of the group, because their defending is just shocking right now. Mm. Although when Rudy comes back, you'd figure that'll improve. But Mason Mount, I like him. And you know what? He's got that fearless nature, not afraid to shoot. I think that will really pay against teams like these that aren't necessarily the best defensively. I think that will really pay him. I think he could really be a shock player.
But Ajax have someone who's not afraid to shoot as well.
Well, they've got Big Donny, yes.
Hakim Ziyech.
Him
produces
as well.
About 7 a game.
We should have knocked Spurs out of the Champions League last year, but...
So he's on a revenge mission.
It's too selfish.
Yeah, with Chelsea as well, obviously it's Lampard's managerial debut.
Yep.
And I always think back to what he did at the start of his tenure at Derby, where in the first sort of 5-6 games, they played out from the back constantly, and it took him that long to sort of reassess and decide that he was going to change the way that he played. But if he's going to do that in the Champions League, then they could already be out. If it takes him 3-4 games to decide, okay, this is how I need to set up, then their chance will be gone.
And that's the thing. Now it's going to be, you're going to have to set up the complete difference in teams that they're playing against now. Already in the Premier League, you can't quite... They're being really good in the first half and then just getting dominated in the second half or losing their rhythm. And I think all of these teams have enough quality to punish them, as they have been punished in the Premier League anyway. So I feel like they might be dipping back into the Europa League.
Yeah, I think Europa League.
It's really hard to pick the top four. That's why I think it's the most exciting, because you could make a genuine argument for even Ajax dropping out based on the surprise factor of Chelsea and Lille debuting.
I mean, losing Frankie is huge. And Frankie and De Ligt, because De Ligt was a massive leader for them, like really like...
scoring all the goals from set
pieces. Yeah, and Frankie was like the best midfielder in Europe last season, as we saw. So losing those two players, like genuinely top class players, I think that's going to hurt a lot.
But then that's what Ajax do though.
I don't think I'll have it straight away. I think they'll replace him eventually. I mean, they've already got De Ligt's replacement. I can't remember what his name is now. He's a young Dutch defender. But I think it'll take time for them to...
They bought the Mexican guy.
They bought Edson Alvarez and Lisandro Martinez, I think is his name, the Argentinian as well. So they have done players, but obviously not as good. So that is two birds, one stone there. Group H will be the most exciting, because you almost can't balance it out of who's going to be who. And there'll be a lot of goals. And then Chelsea, the flops, because I think they will be the ones that succumb to the excitement of that group and maybe finish third or even fourth, given that group is... The winner could end up with 7 points. It could be one of those groups. They're going to be considered a flop because of where they go out, not because they necessarily were bad, if that makes sense. So maybe I've been a bit cheeky in that prediction, but that's my reason for that. We will take another little break there and move on to some surprise teams next, before analysing a few more players to pick out and ones you should watch during the Champions League. So now we're going to be discussing potential dark horses in the Champions League. And by this, we don't mean necessarily teams that maybe have a strong chance of winning it and no one giving them a chance. People that could get to a semi-final where they weren't expected to, like Ajax last season, and even making a final like Spurs. I don't think many people would have predicted that. And what we did to pick the teams for this is we went on the BetBull app and we found everyone that's been given the odds of winning the competition at 50-1 or longer odds, to sort of try and avoid picking Atletico Madrid, because they've spent loads of money and could be a challenger for the Champions League, but you can't really call them a dark horse when they've signed a £100 million teenager, as well as other areas, including Kieran Trippier. So this is 50-1 minimum odds of winning the competition. We've all picked someone, and we've got two people that have picked the same team. So I'll hand over.
You two agreeing on everything.
We agree on everything.
A little double act.
What's this anti-Mo Cabal going on?
Yeah,
I don't know. And anti-me.
I think you did it because it would create less work for us on the podcast.
Oh, don't say that out loud. And also, we do not want to subject anyone to a 4-hour Score Goal podcast.
True.
Despite the fact we would
That's
be,
a better excuse. Yeah, I'll go with that.
We would be willing to do that. So if any of you do want a 4-hour podcast, let me know and I'll sort it out. But dark horse, Inter Milan is who you've submitted as your dark horse, and they are on the cusp of the criteria at 50-1 to win the Champions League. Antonio Conte, Alexis Sanchez, Romelu Lukaku, are they the main reasons why they are your dark horse?
Pretty much, yeah. I toyed with the idea of going with Napoli just because Carlo Ancelotti, in the previous sort of not era of football, was Mr. Champions League for a while. Chucky Lozano, a player you're very excited about. After his move, he obviously played in the Champions League last season, so it wouldn't be his breakthrough season per se, but like I said, it
might have more of a chance.
Got a goal in him in the Champions League against tough opposition.
Yeah.
Inter, though, they tick that box of being in a tough group, so they can warm themselves up. As long as they scrape through that group, then that's behind you and you go into the draw, and like there's enough quality in the competition that topping a group isn't really the be-all and end-all, because if another big team has a poor group stage phase, you might end up drawing them, and then you know, Man City bomb a bit, you might get them, and then Atalanta top their group or whatever, and become the favourable draw in that sense.
So from the group H that I mentioned, none of you'd actually want one of those teams, because none of them are necessarily sort of an elite team.
Yeah, and so they look to have done quite well Serie A so far. Early days, of course, but Stefano Sensi looks pretty good.
Yes,
Lautaro Martinez started alongside Lukaku. Lukaku saying he expects their partnership to get better. Alexis Sanchez might come in, and then if he rediscovers the form of his peak Arsenal years, then that would be a game changer for them. But given the talent they have in the rest of the side, I don't think it's the end of the world if he doesn't necessarily. And I think the effect of that will be that it won't create too much pressure, of course, because it's just a loan. They've not paid the big fee just yet. I really like the spine of their team. Brozovic is quite a cool sort of deep line midfielder. He's like regressed through the from attacking midfielder in a quite Cesc Fabregas-esque way over previous campaigns.
I was just going to say he played that role for Croatia in the World Cup that we mentioned as well. Him, Rakitic and Modric were sort of the perfect trio of midfield. And in Antonio Conte's first game in Syria, Brozovic put out an absolute monster display output-wise. So it looks like he is being made the hub of that.
Say that's been a transition that's taken place over like two and a bit seasons maybe now, so it's not like a recent thing. And then once De Vrij, you think, was out of the last game through injury. Godin still, we think, came on as a sub, but is yet to start because of injury. And then you've got Skriniar there to complete a very, very tasty-looking back three in Antonio Conte's favoured formation. They've got good backup as well in Ranocchio and D'Ambrosio on paper. And then Handanovic at the back. It's quite a nice, solid spine there. The major question mark that Mo has raised off-air, maybe on-air a couple of times, is Antonio Conte's record in the Champions League and, in fact, cups in general. You think Juventus's recent final appearances came after he left. He failed to make it out of the groups one season, disappointingly.
Lost to Bayern, I think.
Yeah, but then again... did quite well with Italy in the Euros and obviously left Chelsea with an FA Cup win in the most difficult of circumstances.
And the first manager to beat Jose Mourinho in an English domestic cup final.
And also, like, if he gets Pep Guardiola maybe in one of the knockouts, I think he's the only manager
to do a domestic league double over him. But as we said,
good chops against the best and brightest in terms of managers.
He's racking up a good CV based on managerial scalps.
Speaking of scalps,
I know. I was hoping someone clocked with that. Perhaps that's how he assembled it. He collected it from other managers and made a brilliant set of head of hair. Sam, you also, as you said, because you really convinced that Inter Milan are also the dark horses, you went for them, and it was pure coincidence that you've gone for Inter Milan as well. Do you have anything to add on why they might be interesting pick? So, as we said, make it further than one might expect.
I think the fact that they're in pot three sort of shows how far they have fallen in recent years. They haven't played a knockout game in the Champions League for 7 years.
Keep getting tough groups.
They won it a decade ago, man. It's crazy, isn't it?
That was they lost to Marseille thanks to Brandao's away goal, which was feels like so long ago. But with Conte coming in, I think what he does well is he gets people onside really quickly, and he can make some quite big impact early on.
He gets people offside quite quickly as well.
I think that's a big strength of him as well, to go into Inter and say goodbye to Nainggolan and Icardi. They're massive pluses for him. Like Will said, the spine of the team, that 3-5-2, they're going to be really difficult to beat home and away. And the other factor I think with them is that the San Siro is obviously being knocked down and they're making a new one. So that if you're going into the game, and potentially it could be Inter's final ever Champions League game at the stadium,
it's quite
then
good.
That I'd back the players to be able to find the extra 5-10% when they have that in the back of their minds.
Put that on the wall in the changing room. Tap that as you go out. This could be your last game.
I think that just the way the group has fallen for them, so their back-to-back sort of double-header game in the middle is against Dortmund. So if they highlight those two as the ones that they need to get their points from, then they'll be through. So their final game is against Barcelona at home. You'd fancy Barcelona's probably already be through by then. So that's another thing that's really in their favour.
The point you make there about Inter Milan, they actually threw it away, didn't they, last season? They were in a good position was Chucky.
It was Chucky Lozano who basically knocked them out and ensured Tottenham's progression to the final. Because, I mean, Spurs got the draw against Barcelona, which was Barca basically... Like Inter could have this season. Barca rested all their players. They're already through. They played a few players. Dembele scored a worldie. And then they were like, oh, we're 1-0 up. Take the foot off the gas. Just chill. And Spurs got back in it because they needed to get back into it. And then you're thinking 1-1's not going to be enough. And then, Chucky Lozano
pops up.
And then they squeak through. So, Inter threw it away. But then under Conte, it's a whole different thing. But the one thing I would just say is against Inter is that Conte doesn't like the Champions League, doesn't do well in the Champions League. And he famously has trouble juggling multiple competitions. His players get tired. So that's all I would say.
He demands so much, doesn't he? And I think that was a theme of when they did steamroll the Premier League. It was because it was like Conte.
They weren't in Europe.
All I have to think about is the Premier League, and just absolutely blew everyone away with that. And on the way to getting that record over Pep Guardiola that we mentioned. Yeah. I know this is veering off course, and I apologise, but Dortmund are at risk then of going out, despite their sort of young... Remember, they had a wealthy summer.
I think Sancho is going to be immense. I mean, he already is immense. He's been immense for ages. I wanted to put him in a breakout star, and I was like, you can't put Sancho. He's already broken out. I was like, well,
he's definitely already broken out.
But he's so good.
Because for Inter Milan to be a dark horse, either Dortmund or Barcelona is good, unless they have dark horse in the Europa League and you were galaxy brain.
I didn't know that was an option.
What I'm saying is,
I'm happy to take it.
What I'm saying is, for them to be a dark horse, they are going to have to knock out either Dortmund or Barcelona. So that's a serious claim that you've made there, and I hope you realise what you've done.
No.
Jadon Sancho fan club coming for you.
At least there's no record of me having made the claim.
No, of course. Mo, let's move on to your dark horse.
Olympique Lyonnais. I'm not just saying that because my son loves them.
I thought you were going to say
Olympiacos. Oh my god, no. No, I'm not just saying that because my son loves them, because Umtiti and Lacazette used to play for them.
80-1 to win the competition, which I imagine you're not...
They're not going to win it, but I think they'll get out of the group. It's Zenit, Leipzig, and Benfica. Benfica lost João Félix, so they're going to be a bit poor. Zenit.
Got Malcolm,
and they're good at home, but that's about it. And Leipzig, I mean, well, you can talk more about Leipzig when it comes to it, but they've got Memphis Depay, who, I mean, how do you not love Memphis Depay? 4 goals, 1 assist already this season. They've got Moussa Dembele, who got 20 goals in 46 games last season. That attack is coming into its own. All right, they lost Nabil Fekir, but it's not the end of the world. Houssem Aouar is coming into his own. He's just a sensational footballer, easily the equal of Tanguy Ndombele. And they lost Ndombele, and that's a shame. But Aouar is so good.
Who did they buy, though, Mo?
Jeff.
Yes.
Rain. Adelaide. And he's going to be great for them, I think, as well. I think he's at a sensational time. I mean, if you remember, think back to the Emirates Cup way back when, he was like 16 or something.
The most prestigious competition.
And he played in it and he was absolutely amazing. I was thinking, oh my God, this guy is the next flipping Vieira.
No, but we're talking about a transition of positions. He obviously was signed as sort of a winger, number 10, and has moved further back into that number 8 role.
Yeah.
And is a ball-carrying menace. So I'm really... And they also signed one of Lille's best midfielders as well. So that may count against the group of...
Let's say quarterfinals. I think
does that have to be a dark horse, Lyon quarterfinal? Is that much of a surprise considering they beat Man City in the groups last season?
Yeah, but then they can't really defend, can they? They conceded like how many goals they conceded? Let's say semi-finals. Let's be bold. They get to the semis. They're going to knock out.
I wasn't saying you had to predict them getting to the semi-finals, but do you feel like they actually do have the potential to?
Genuinely. I mean, because they've got this, they've got a really interesting attack, and I just think it's an awkward place to go. I mean, they drew Barcelona in the last round, so that's kind of unfortunate, really. Mm. Like, if they'd drawn someone that wasn't like that good, they might have actually gone past the round 16 last year.
And again, was it 0-0?
0-0 in Gerland. Yeah. So look, they're a good team. They're a good home side. They've got a lovely attack. I just think there's. I would not want to face Lyon. You know what I mean? As an opposition team, all right, it's hardly going to Anfield or anything, but it's not an easy walk in the park at the Gerland. So I think Lyon would do well. I think quarterfinals sounds about right. Again, maybe even semis. They might not.
Yeah, their
someone.
Group is again one of the groups this season. There's like that Group F, which has Barcelona, Dortmund, Inter, and then this is as you mentioned, Benfica, Lyon, Leipzig, Zenit. Again, all sort of in a level playing field there. My dark horse is actually coming from that group as well, and again we alluded to it. I picked out RB Leipzig purely because I think they could almost do that sort of Ajax and get to a semi-final, because Julian Nagelsmann's Hoffenheim last season, and obviously he's the manager this season, so I couldn't really look at Leipzig stats, because Nagelsmann has that particular style of play, wants to play a 3-4-3, has transitioned into the classic Leipzig 4-4-2 already this season once, but will play his style of play. And Hoffenheim last season, you could make the argument that they were the most unique team in the Bundesliga, because if you go onto Opta Pro's reviews of each of the top five leagues, and they give you breakdowns of expected goals against, and also sequences. And the best thing about the sequences part is that they analyse not only the average amount of passes in a sequence, but also the speed in which the team moves up the pitch in metres per second. And it's really nice graph, because it has it in sort of fast and direct, slow and intricate, fast and intricate, and you mix it all like that. And Hoffenheim were the only outliers, and they weren't really close to the fast and intricate style, but they were the only team that had a genuine margin from the median average of passes per sequence and direct speed.
Yeah.
So I feel like Hoffenheim, in the same way that I highlighted Liverpool as being a really good knockout team because they can play that explosive transition football, as well as just bombard you with genuine quality attacking play, RB Leipzig with Nagelsmann are now like a Liverpool light in that respect, and they mirror Liverpool's stats in that manner, which I think will lend it.
I was going to say they need a better goalie. Ralph.
Do they?
Leipzig
have got Gulashi, who's best goalie.
What I was going to say was they need a better goalie, because Hoffenheim last season, what let them down was Ralph Farman in goal. He conceded a
yes,
a
bite, but this is what I mean. So you take that incredible Hoffenheim side. Model. They were exciting. They were second for expected goals, quite low down for expected goals against, which you mentioned defensively wise. But you then import that into RB Leipzig's really well-assembled, exciting team, and you have a perfect marriage. They are the only team in the Bundesliga that have won all of their games so far. 100% record. So I expect them to do well in the Bundesliga, but also I feel like the team is built, as I'm this sort of same theory that I had for Liverpool winning the competition. Leipzig, I feel, have the potential to cause some serious issues. And Timo Werner, who everyone believed was going to move to Bayern or Liverpool and was not signing a contract, has signed a new contract. And if you watch how they dismantled Gladbach on the break in their recent win in the Bundesliga, moments like that are why I'm so sort of invested in them doing really well, because I feel like they have better quality than they do at Hoffenheim. But Nagelsmann as a coach and the style of play instills, as I said, it's one of the most unique in the Bundesliga, at least. I feel like they're going to surprise a lot of people. And going back to your point about groups, Will, they don't have a tough group in terms of relative class. They don't have, Inter Milan's situation of being against Dortmund and Barcelona. But they have good enough quality relative to their own to still be competitive. So I think it lends them well. And then I just think the further they go into the competition, the more they might revert back to the traditional, and it's ironic saying traditional for RB Leipzig, given their how they were born out. But we might see that 4-4-2 and then just explosive forwards. They also got Patrick Schick on loan from Roma, who is...
Oh, he's a hell of a player to watch.
He is a really beautiful player to watch. has a Van Persie-esque left foot and demeanour about him. So I'm really looking forward to see him doing quite well.
Tall, rangy, he's fun to watch.
And elegant, though. It's not just a thing. So that's my reasoning why RB Leipzig are going to be a favourite, because I've looked at what Hoffenheim did. I feel like Nagelsmann's now got a better squad to do it, and in the Champions League. Remember when they drew Liverpool, Hoffenheim? They got beaten
the groups,
quite comfortably
in the
qualifying, wasn't it?
They got trended in the qualifying.
Yeah, that was the Nagelsmann's first...
I think in qualifying they got Firmino'd.
Trent scored a free hit, didn't he?
Ah, of course, yeah.
I think that was his first goal.
Yes.
Liverpool. And in that game,
I think
Sadio Mane pulled off two delicious back heel assists in that
two
game.
Two back heel assists. Yeah. Well, there you go. But I feel like Nagelsmann has now got a better squad with that than that Hoffenheim team. And maybe we could see a rematch of Nagelsmann versus Liverpool. And as I said, they're similar styles of play in terms of approach. So that would be one that I would definitely look out for. But that's me giving my dark horse. So we had Inter Milan, Lyon and RB Leipzig there. We're going to move next on to players to watch, and more specifically the sort of awards or the things you can be the best at in terms of stats. We will start with top scorer, which was last season, of course, Lionel Messi. He's favourite again.
Yeah, as Messi is apt to be.
And then Cristiano Ronaldo is next, Mr. Champions League. And as I the stat I mentioned earlier about him being directly involved in sort of 8 more goals than the other player, a lot of those are actual goals, getting another hat-trick in the knockout stages last season. But then third on BetBull at 8-1 is Sergio Aguero.
Yes.
Who piqued all of our interest when we were preparing for this podcast. Mm. And Will, I think you did another expedition into the numbers yourself.
I put my safari hat on.
Yeah, you mentioned sort of your ecstatic outbursts yesterday when finding the PSG stats. I feel like there were some also for Sergio Aguero.
Oh, not more so.
William Shackleton Hall. Take us on a trip.
Don't mind who I do. So it kind of ties with, as I said, I predicted Man City would win because of, like, they just seem to be the safest bet. And I spoke earlier about why they won't win, but that was for the sake of content more than anything. And so what would follow that is team that progresses furthest, their players have more games in which to score goals. Those players are going to top the goal scoring charts. So that's all fairly logical. Sergio Aguero, of course, has 6 goals already in the Premier League in 4 games. City have the best assist providers in Europe. They have done for a few seasons, well, have done since Guardiola took charge. Speaking of Guardiola, his natural inclination towards Gabriel Jesus as more of a system player has sort of softened on account of Aguero's development in the role. So you don't have to be too worried about his lack of playing time, I don't think, bar if injuries swab him of games again. But he has started, I think, the last 3 games, so that seems like a less an obstacle. And also, to add a little bit of flavour to the prediction, if he scores 5, he'll set a new record for goals scored for an English club within the Champions League since the rebranding, overtaking Thierry Henry, Ruud van Nistelrooy and Didier Drogba, who's currently on the most, on the way. I think that will put him on 37. Which will be the new record.
Correct.
Will he do it? He's averaging 4.9 per season goals in the Champions League and 0.6 a game, I think. And then under Guardiola, so that's since the start of the 2016-17 season, he's actually averaging 0.91 goals every 90 minutes played. And that's a better record than Cristiano Ronaldo. Only Lionel Messi and, very interestingly, Wissam Ben Yedder can beat that. And also, during this time frame, he's taking more shots on goal, on target. Shots on target are a good thing to dip into because the sample size is so wide and they obviously relate to how many goals you'll score. All the top goal scorers take the most shots and get them on target.
Is this Champions League specific?
This is
Champions League specific.
And so only Lionel Messi, discounting players who have made fewer than 10 appearances, has a better record than him. You might say that I'm kind of inadvertently making a case for Lionel Messi to win the award again during that whole thing. But what I look at with Aguero is the fact that he could be on, like, he could basically have set the new record that I referred to earlier for goals scored for an English club before the group stages even end. Because in their group, they've got Shakhtar, who conceded 16 in the last Champions League group stage, 9 of which were scored by City. Gabriel Jesus obviously getting a hat-trick. And then I think they've got Dinamo Zagreb as the other team. In their last 2 seasons in the Champions League, they've conceded 29.
I think Zagreb were the most recent team to join the infamous group of losing all 6 group games. I believe that was them in recent seasons.
And then
Atalanta.
Their last 2 seasons being 15-16 and 16-17. Mm. So 29 goals conceded across those 2. And then Atalanta, as you say, who are a dangerous proposition and they're an unknown quantity, who did quite well, I think, in the Europa League when they were in it, at the cost of poor league form, poor league form. But they're not a team who relies on their defensive solidity, really. They conceded 46 times in 38 Serie A games last season, which was pretty much, I think, bar Roma, maybe the worst in the top 8. Mm-hmm. And they've conceded 6 already in this season, or 6 or 5, I think. Both their games have been 3-2, so I think it's 5. So in 2 games. So,
but Serie A is wild this
basically
season as well.
Aguero or Messi, but Aguero I lean towards because it's less boring and because their group is just, he can fill his boots.
If he comes out of the group with
he scored three hat-tricks last season. So
if he doesn't come out of the group with 6 goals, it has to be because he hasn't played. Someone genuinely, I can't imagine him not scoring that many based on the opposition they've got and just what we've said about Man City all podcast.
Yeah.
Is they can steamroll at any team they want.
Yeah.
And as well, if you look at their game against Brighton, obviously Pep Guardiola was very positive about Graham Potter in general and loved how Brighton played. Man City beat them 4-0 because they're just better. So I think the similar thing's going to happen. They're, his little love affair with Fonseca, I think, at Shakhtar in previous seasons was like, oh, you play such good football, so do we. And it happened with Sarri when they met Napoli as well. And there was sort of that understanding, like, we play good football, you play good football. The reason Pep Guardiola loves it is because his team play the best football. So when you pit them against each other, they score seven. And Man City as well, during when we did the script stuff, just to go back to that, we stumbled across the stat that in all of their knockout games, they're averaging like 12 goals a tie. If you think back to the Monaco game that I mentioned earlier as well with Falcao, that was Man City 5-3 and then
3-1.
A lot of goals there. Then obviously the Liverpool and the Spurs games.
Spurs was like 1-0 first one, but obviously 4-3.
But then 6 in 11 minutes, I think it was, in the whole game. So Man City lend themselves to scoring a lot of goals anyway. And Aguero in that group surely is just salivating at the prospect of netting 9 in 6 games there.
Yeah, so you mentioned the rebrand there, Will. In terms of the figure that it's needed to win the award. So since it started, double figures were needed to win it in 5 occasions until Ronaldo and Messi hit their stride. But since they've taken over, basically, it's been 8 seasons of a row with 10 plus. And I think Ronaldo, 17 he topped out with. Yeah. So you're going to need to go over 10, maybe 11, 12.
Messi was 12 last year.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
The next was Lewandowski. So Messi 12, Lewandowski 8, who was someone that I nearly said was going to be my pick for Golden Boot. But then I just sort of got dissuaded by Bayern in general. But I think Lewandowski will be up there again. And then it was Aguero on 6 and a collection of other players on 6. So he was third last season.
The one thing about Lewandowski that might affect him this season, I think Coutinho will take shots away from him because Coutinho loves to pop off shots, which means Lewandowski will have less shots. And doesn't not say that they'll be bad or anything. I still think he'll score loads of goals.
Lewandowski was didn't he say that Coutinho was the deadliest player in the Bundesliga or had the best final
ball
in the Bundesliga?
Yeah, he was moaning before they made any big signings about the lack of signings, and then they signed Coutinho, and then I think he signed a new deal with Bayern.
Yeah,
he's happy now.
So
he was full of praise.
He likes a whinge, doesn't he?
He likes a whinge, but boy, does he
like a goal
back
too.
It up.
Yeah, he likes a goal too.
I think he's got 40 goals in the last 4 seasons. So expect him. He's got to get at least 5. But I think Aguero, there, as I said, piqued all of our interest beforehand. And if we were going to do a collective pick, I think we'd all be happy of saying sort of Aguero is a low key shout. Obviously, as we've said, Messi is going to be up there. Ronaldo, surprisingly, last season ended up with sort of in that cluster of 5 or 6 anyway, but was his worst group stage.
There were so many comebacks.
Got sent off, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were so many comebacks in the Champions League last season. The one that just fades from the memory is the hat trick he scored against Atletico Madrid.
Exactly.
Just and peak Ronaldo.
And they're in Atletico's group as well.
Exactly. And he's in his last 2 knockout stages. He scored a hat-trick against Atletico Madrid.
He loves Atletico Madrid. So he'll get at least, I would imagine, 5 goals against them. Forget everyone else. He'll get at least 5 goals against those guys. So he loves Atletico. I think Griezmann's going to get top scorer, to be honest. I mean, I did think Messi was going to get it. I thought, that's boring. Let's pick someone else. And I thought, maybe Ronaldo. I thought, that's boring. Let's pick someone else. And then I thought Aguero. But then
Is being correct boring, though? That's the thing.
Well, I'm right so often, mate. I want to try and mix it up.
Well, let me get the recent tally out.
Couldn't you also say that Messi and Griezmann are going to eat each other's goals?
No, because let me go into why I think Griezmann's going to win. I think Messi is a group stage merchant with goals. We know this, right? He scores absolutely hammers him in the group stage. When it comes to knockout rounds, teams just compress on him to stop him from doing that, and he ends up passing the ball a lot to his teammates. And when Barcelona win the Champions League, his teammates step up and score goals. Neymar and Suarez did it in 14-15. Suarez was sort of doing it 15-16, stopped, and then basically once those guys stopped scoring goals, 15-16, 16-17, 17-18, Barcelona struggled. Against Liverpool last season, they needed a Messi masterclass to beat Liverpool 3-0.
These are sort of the points you mentioned earlier.
Griezmann will score goals.
Messi will become a creator, and by virtue of Mo predicting Barcelona to win, you obviously feel that Griezmann will get plenty. They've got such a tough group though.
I think he'll bag it more in the knockouts. I think
if we're saying Aguero is going to be on 9 by the time he finishes the group stage, Griezmann's got to have the best knockout stage in history.
Mate, watch him do
to
it.
To beat him. Ooh, I would love to see
a new dance from Fortnite to celebrate.
I'd love to see that sort of thing happen. Talking about most assists, which there aren't any odds for, this was a pretty unanimous choice when we did the Squawker sort of sweep
round. I think the
entire
office said this, right? Like,
apart from, oh no, we've had a new entry. I was going to say the only person that didn't say Kevin De Bruyne was Mo. Surprise, surprise. And also we've had a new entry of Griezmann having most assists. So an inverse of your theory from Ben Green about that one. But it's only because I forced him to do it this morning, so I probably put him under so much pressure. And I said he wouldn't get a shout out because he did it late. But lo and behold, he has a shout out for picking someone different. But just quickly, and do we even need to discuss it that much?
No, he's very good.
The fact that Kevin De Bruyne, if we think Sergio Aguero is getting 15 in the group stage, I'm going to raise it each time I mention it. If Aguero is going to get 74 in the group stage, De Bruyne is going to be assisting
50%. Did you want to compare yourself to Aguero on this podcast? Also?
Yes. I backed myself to score 9 if Kevin De Bruyne is putting in those crosses to me as well.
You could maybe say that City would share their assists around more because they always have a cluster of assists.
So De Bruyne already this season has assisted in every Premier League game. In the process became the fastest player ever to provide 50 assists in a Premier League by a good 19 games, being Mesut Ozil's record. We've seen his incredible crossing, we've seen his incredible movement, we've seen the classic Man City cutbacks, and as you said, even though they're sharing him around, Kevin De Bruyne in the Premier League most assists 5, who's next? David Silva 4.
See, here's the thing with De Bruyne, why I think he's going to do it, because previously, obviously, when City were great, when De Bruyne was great before the injury, it was Sterling and Sané on the wing, right? Sterling's an orthodox winger. Now it's Bernardo Silva or Riyad Mahrez. They're cutting through a lot. So there's always... So not only is De Bruyne playing those through passes that he can play, right, cutting teams up, he's now also the one playing those cutbacks, those crosses. You know, he's now getting down the outside. He's playing the crosses. He's playing the cutbacks. And that's going to bump his assist numbers up so much.
If you look at a recent thing that we're starting this season, sort of doing a goal of the month, but not your classic goal of the month, and just choosing the furthest goal, the goal scored from the furthest distance away. Last Row View on Twitter is at puts together these really cool 2D animations. Yeah. And the goal that we picked was actually Kevin De Bruyne running around the outside of Riyad Mahrez and cutting it back to Sergio Aguero to score. So expect to see that copy and pasted 7 times in the Champions League group stages. And just another sort of semi-stat to back up the fact that Man City could tie up both of these awards in the group stage, even if they don't go on to win it, as Sam and I nearly predicted, but remembered it should be Liverpool. Riyad Mahrez got 4 assists last season in the Champions League. The most was 5. Riyad Mahrez nearly picked up the assist award in the group stage because he just played. So if Aguero even plays 4 games and Gabriel Jesus plays and gets 2 hat-tricks as well, you could just have that cluster stat padding Man City just at the top. And it's hard to beat because we've discussed how difficult the Champions League group stage is.
Football.
There you go. My top scorer shout was Sadio Mane because he's good at scoring in every round and just that consistent and that selfishness we saw. could play a key part. And then you've put Mo, to delve into a different assister.
Yeah.
And this is what we're going to have to finish on this week to avoid, as I said, the 4-hour extravaganza. Discuss why you're the only person on our list, apart from Ben's late entry, that has put Roberto Firmino as the most assists in Champions League this season.
I'll tell you why. Because in every game this season, apart from the Arsenal one, he scored a goal and made an assist. 1 assist against Norwich, 2 against Chelsea. He scored a goal against Saints, 1 goal, 1 assist against Burnley. He is...
Goals don't count as assists.
He is... Obviously, look, everyone knows how great Firmino is. There's that famous Klopp quote where Salah's world-class some of the time. Bobby Firmino's world-class all the time. That's not necessarily true, but he's a proven big-game player. He's an excellent creative player. He's an excellent presser. He's an excellent passer. The reason why Mane had such a good season last season was because Salah was so good. The first season before, everyone was like, oh God, we've got to mark Mohamed Salah. So then suddenly Mane's in loads of space. Now Mane's had a great season. Now they're going to man mark. People are going to really focus on stopping those two. And of course, because the fullbacks are so good, people are going to be putting players wide to stop Liverpool now. Mm-hmm. It's going to leave more space for Firmino. I think we're going to see the year of Firmino. Like, he's going to take a bit more of a centre stage. Not necessarily in every game. And he's not going to finish top scorer. But I think he will be a focal player. Like we even in the Arsenal game where he didn't score assist, it was his beautiful one-touch pass that released Salah for the penalty. So I think he's going to come big, especially in the knockout rounds. I think he's going to be... People are just going to forget he's there. They're going to focus too much on the wingmen. He's going to pop up. He won't score the goal because everyone will rush towards him. He's got that thing we call Pauser. He'll hold the ball, slip it off, and then Mane or Salah or someone's going to score.
And Mane will become top scorer.
Well, I mean, you know.
And beat Aguero's 96 goals in the Champions League group stage.
Can't split into teams on this prediction.
I know, he has. And despite me absolutely hounding Mo for his Barcelona prediction, it turns out we've aligned ourselves in all of our predictions since. Funny how things work.
Yeah, it's
on a score talker. But, as I said, I think we've covered plenty of Champions League stuff there. And obviously the beauty of this podcast is it's 2 weeks until the group stage starts. So next week we'll return to our Premier League preview as that comes back. But you've now got 2 weeks to digest, listen back and listen again to the Champions League predictions podcast. And hopefully we'll be hearing some of your own predictions about some of the topics we've talked about and whether you agree with what we've talked about as well. So that just leaves me to say... thank you to our guests for joining you. Sam, thank you for your predictions.
Thank you.
Will, thank you for returning.
No problemo.
Mo, thank you for aligning yourself with all of my predictions.
Thank you for hammering me, much.
No, it's fine. That's what we do on the podcast to produce the best debate in football history.